Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit Lowe's.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
I have.
Hello.
Okay, I was talking.
Go for it.
Okay, well, hi, everyone. Now that I'm permitted to talk by my master.
Yes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Hi.
We are Soul of a Gamer podcast. I'm Scott.
We are. And I'm Scott's master, Steven.
Master Steven. And every week we play a game. We give you a little in-depth story, background, making of the game, and give you our in-depth review as well.
Yeah. Without going too spoilery.
Yeah, without going too spoilery, we know that you guys don't want the game ruined for you if you want to try it out yourselves.
Exactly.
So with that, let's just jump right into this.
So yeah, I guess, what have you been playing this week?
I have been actually playing a lot of Mass Effect Andromeda again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, that game gets this weird thing where it was really bad on release. It had, and not really bad,
yeah.
I shouldn't say. It had some weird facial stuff, like the faces didn't quite match what they were doing. But I don't know, the gameplay's fun, the story's actually kind of interesting, the fucking worlds are cool. I think people just harshed on it too much, and now we'll never get a sequel, and they never even finished the story. Like, there's no... The story was going to finish in a sequel.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer. It's such a good game.
So is it tied to the trilogy?
Kind of. It takes place in a different galaxy.
Oh, okay.
So people of Milky Way decided to leave the galaxy before the third game, which is like the End of Days game.
Yeah.
And they went to Andromeda on a 600-year journey, and they're all frozen,
okay.
And they wake up in Andromeda. It's really cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That does sound pretty nice. I know a lot of people said that the gameplay was pretty nice for it, but they didn't like the story as comparison to the trilogy.
Yeah, the story's a little bit weaker, but still, I like it. It's fun.
Yeah. I've been playing Dark Souls 3 again, and I actually randomly got back into The Last of Us Part 2. I got the remastered of that, and I've been playing through it again. I'm almost at the end this time.
Nice.
I'm actually going to push through to the end.
You made it through the part you hate.
The part I hate's there's a part that I hate at the beginning, and it's the part that everyone thought was like the most controversial. Honestly, I think the hardest part of the game is just playing as Abby, just because her story kind of slugs along, and you play through half the game as Ellie, and then you basically start the game over again as Abby, and you have to start from scratch and doing all the upgrades as another character fully. And so it's just a weird pacing issue for me more than anything.
Yeah, so instead of doing that, what they should have done is had Abby be like a step ahead of Ellie, where some of the upgrades
exactly.
are already done. That would have been smarter.
Yeah.
That sucks.
And they use different weapons and different upgrades and different things, so it's kind of weird. Like, they tried to keep it like fully separate, even though it's the same game in the same world and using the same schemes.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the ending to that game, and I know what happened, so it's just kind of... dumb because they did the whole, like, anti-hero thing. There is no bad guy. The bad guy is everyone.
Yeah, everyone's a bad guy. Everyone... The story I'm getting from this a lot, and I've been seeing this in a lot of movies and stuff lately, is that everyone is capable of really horrible shit. And the only way to stop violence is to stop violence. And you really can't answer violence with violence.
Yeah.
It's the whole Gandhi eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been fun getting back into it, though, still.
For sure.
All right. So Let's tell us about the game then.
Let's jump right into story mode. Yay! Woo! The game, first off, guys, we're going to start doing the game synopsis before the story. Sorry, we've been forgetting to do that. So we're going to give you a synopsis. Don't worry. We're leaving you in the dark a little bit about what the game's about. So we're going to do that. The game of Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 takes place after the events of the first game. It follows Senua as she travels as a slave to the lands of the raiders that have been kidnapping and killing her people. She seeks the reason why, but finds it was more than she bargained for, as the adventure for freedom turns into a war against giants.
Whoa.
So first off, the starting of development for the game begins just after the first game came out. Shortly after the first game's release, the studio, Ninja Theory, who has released other games such as Enslaved, Odyssey to the West, which we've played, that's actually a really good game, and the first Hellblade was bought by Microsoft Studios. After being bought, the team went from being 20 people to over 100. This really helped them do more with the second game that they felt they couldn't do with the first. They also moved to a new building where they had a real mocap space. In the past, they had an unused office that they did all their mocap in. This was not ideal for the size was too small. With their new space, their mocap studio was much larger, as well as they were able to put several projector screens that help build the areas of the game for the actors to see. Just imagine that, though. Like, you do all your mocap in a fucking little studio office.
I don't know if you saw any of those behind-the-scenes clips of that, where they're doing the projections, but, like, there's actually characters that are live-action in the game, like, completely, and they, like, projected the screen onto them to make it look, like, film grainy. It's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool looking at the video, too, of their first mocap space and how small it was and just seeing that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's so big now. It is crazy.
Oh, it is.
Okay, blah, blah, blah. Where was I here? Hold on. they wanted a flagship game. Help to build the area game. They wanted a flagship game for the Xbox Series X, which is really funny because this game came out well after the Xbox. This plan would be put on hold as the team was preparing to leave for Iceland to do research on the terrain. The pandemic hit and crippled any plans of a game starting production.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. When the pandemic subsided a bit, Ninja Theory continued production. They went to Iceland to get a glimpse of the terrain. They used a drone to get as much video as they could to base the game off real areas. If the game is played at the highest settings for graphics, it's hard to distinguish between the screen and an actual picture. The actors in the game are Melina Jurgens as Senua, Chris O'Reilly as Thorgester. Oh my god, I hate this guy. Gudmundur Thorvaldsson as Fargrimir, Aldous Hamilton as Astrid, Helen Golan as Abby Helen Golan and Abby Greenland as the Furies, and Cheapo Chum as the narrator. So a lot of very interesting names that they chose for this. There was a lot that was revamped for the game. In the first game, there were many possible combos that were included. In the second game, however, they wanted to simplify the combat, so they added more animations to cut the combo count. For the combat in the first game, they also had a stunt double for Mel, Chloe Bruce. For the second game, however, they wanted to use their new space and capture more of Mel for the mocap. They really wanted to get specific movements of Mel's body down in order to have a more realistic game. And I'm referring to Melina as Mel because that's how they refer to her in every fucking thing I watched.
Yes.
They really wanted to get specific movement of Mel's body down in order to have more realistic game. They also said if Mel could not do something that the studio wanted her to do, they would scrap it. So they had Mel take several fighting classes where she learned sword fighting and MMA from her boyfriend, who is an MMA fighter, which crazy. The first time she went into the class, she was very uncomfortable because all the people there were going to go on and become stunt actors and such, and she had no experience with this kind of thing previously. She also joked that she felt embarrassed because she had problems touching her toes while standing. I thought that was pretty funny,
too. I can't
do
it either. I'm embarrassed about that.
This was also a very difficult thing for Mel, to do because she suffers from fibromyalgia. Yeah, super weird, but this is a disease characterized by widespread musculoskeletal pain accompanied by fatigue, sleep memory, and mood issues. This disease makes it hard for Mel to be active for long periods of time. She did go on a fitness journey in order to strengthen her muscles for the sword classes. After spending time in the class, Ninja Theory decided to put all the animators for the game into the sword fighting class as well. This way they would have a better understanding of what Mel was doing. This would also help Mel keep her skills up for the mocap takes. While the animators were in the sword fighting class, Mel still needed someone to practice with. So Ninja Theory hired C.C. Smith, an award-winning combat coordinator that had worked on sword fighting in both Star Wars and Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
At the start of her training with CC, he wanted her to try certain techniques to find her comfort zone. The one she was able to do with little efforts, they kept, and the one she struggled with, they removed. She joked that most of the moves shown to her that she tried, should have been avoided. With the animators done with the class, and the team got to work with on that. With the animators done with the class, the team got to work on the mocap. A couple of cooler things I found were the opening scene of the game to simulate the passengers on the boat. The team had to mocap actors on a board with railings that was suspended from the ceiling. It was wobbly and did a good job of making the actors feel like they were on a real boat. The other thing I found that was the combat director was inspired on how to make the combat by an episode of Game of Thrones, Battle of the Bastards.
Okay.
Yeah, apparently that was a huge inspiration on all the combat in Hellblade 2.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Costume design played a much more impactful role in this game than in the first one as well. In the first game, Mel did not have a game costume made for her. It was all programmed in. This time around, they wanted to capture the fitting of the costume on the actor's body, as well as how the costume looked as the actress moved. This is all to create a more realistic look for the game. In the original game, the team captured the way Mel looked by using a company called 3Lateral. In the original game as well, 3Lateral captured just over a gigabyte of information on Mel. For the second game, again, for a more realistic look, they captured over a terabyte.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so like going from 1 gigabyte...
1,000% more?
Yep, isn't that crazy?
Or 1,024% more, or whatever. Yeah, it's, yeah. It's like 1,024.
It's just per terabyte. It's holy fucking. Shit. It is fucking crazy.
that's crazy.
Yep. The game has a lot of instances when Senua would experience bouts of psychosis. For this, Ninja Theory consulted with Professor Paul Fletcher, an expert in clinical and research of neuroscience and psychiatry, who works at Cambridge University. He was used for the original game as well. They also interviewed individuals who suffered from psychosis to gain more clear perspective in how to include it for Senua. One of the things that Paul Fletcher thought was really cool about the game is that they tackle the idea of dual reality. This is where the people with psychosis feel like they have their own reality, but are also understanding of the reality everyone around them else feel. This is often overlooked in the field. Music of the game plays a very important role as well. The music is done by the experimental folk band Heilung. They are a Norwegian band that focuses mainly on Viking-inspired music. The team also hired several heavy metal singers, throat singers, and actors who play the Furies to do additional songs and you know, singing voices.
I love the throat singing in this. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
In
the end, the game came out to mixed reviews from critics and gamers. Many reviews online praise music and visuals, but are upset by the short game playtime.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the story.
Well, it's crazy to me, too, that Mel had never acted before
getting
any of the Signal Sacrifice. Like, the first game was her first acting experience. Well, she was just...
Did you read why she got that role?
I don't remember, no.
She she worked at Ninja Theory as a programmer.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, or as like an animator or something.
Because I know they had her standing in for Senua, and then they ended up just liking her as Senua, and then they kept on asking her to do it, and she was really uncomfortable with it at first, and then, especially like in the very emotional scenes, she actually asked everyone to like leave the room.
Yeah.
So she could act it without having to worry about other people being around her. Yeah. And I'm like, that's very interesting. For as good as she does for the acting. I'm surprised it's her first and second role ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it does suck that this game was in developmental hell for a while.
Yeah.
Especially because this was supposed to come out on release with the console, but then got postponed, I think, 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. And not only that, it came out and then everyone just shit on it. Like, like, I will say they should have done more. We'll get to that more when we talk about certain things. But they did a good job with what they had, but it does feel like it's nothing. Like, it feels like there's something missing in that game.
So I guess let's get on to the best and the worst parts of the game then.
Let's do it.
So, worst parts of the game for me, I'm going to start with the worst. I do not like the dumbed down combat and how simplified the puzzles were.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there, especially with the combat. You know, in the previous game, they made it important to both parry and dodge.
Yes.
And in this game, you basically just parry. There's no fucking dodge. You don't need to dodge. What's the point in dodging?
I parried more than I dodged, or I dodged more than I parried.
But you can,
in this one,
you can do one or the other.
Yes,
but you don't need to do both. Like,
yeah.
But in the first game, they made it a very important point that both needed to be done in order to succeed in combat.
The combos were a lot better. I liked having the different combos that you could do in the first game, as compared to the second one. I also the focus meter seemed way ridiculous because, like, in the first game, you had 3 bars of the focus meter that you could fill up, and in this one you only get 1, and it's the shortest amount of span. Like, you have enough time to kill 1 enemy, and every fight is 1-on-1 no matter what in this one, which felt weird
because the original again had a point where you'd be fighting like 2 or 3 enemies at a time.
And
you know, you got that sometimes in this, but not nearly as much. And then the boss battles are gone too, so that just makes it boring as shit.
Well, and this one just seemed weird because, like, you'll be fighting someone 1-on-1 and you'll kill them, and then you'll just get tackled or hit from behind, and you automatically just have to get hit. Like, there's no way to dodge it. There's no way to parry it. There's no way anything. And it's very annoying to have that happen almost after every single enemy you kill.
Yeah. It's just, you're right, it's super simplified. This game really did a piss poor job, I think, on revamping the combat in a way that was entertaining. I think, you know, combos aside, take all the combos you want out, the combat still has to be fun.
Yeah.
So if they would have put in more enemies to fight, a couple boss battles, you know, they had like pseudo boss battles with Thorgester and like the bigger enemies that were kind of like bosses. Just
missed the boss battles that were in the first game.
Yeah.
The first game's boss battles were incredible against all the different Norse gods.
Yeah.
Like going against Fenrir and Suter and couple of those other or Hela. This just felt weird, and I guess kind of we'll do a good one, we'll do a bad then a good, bad then good. Great thing, the visuals are
phenomenal,
extraordinary.
Yeah, phenomenal. Like
like it's
guys, I said
there's
it.
Not many video games that can be on par with this level of visuals. Like, the visuals,
if you put it at the highest settings, you cannot distinguish that from a literal real life.
Yes.
It is crazy.
I mean, they even added the detail that they removed the film grain, and added it to things to make it look less like the real, make things look less real in the first one. So in the first one, they added a film grain to make everything make sure you're like really knowing that you're in like kind of a fantasy world.
Yeah,
they took it away in this one, which really just made the visuals pop that much more. And so, like, especially if you're direct comparison 1 versus 2, it's wild.
Yeah, I will tell you guys right now, this game eats up a shit ton of fucking like GPU shit.
Oh, I bet.
Mine
was
like
on a console.
Mine was just steaming hot from this. Like, I played like 6 other games to make sure my PC was okay. Because I'm like, why is it so fucking hot? Like, I touch it and I burn my hand.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, and I had to point a fan towards it because I was so worried about it melting the case.
God damn.
So, yeah, like, this game does take a lot of fucking processing power to show you those visuals.
So if you're playing it on PC, be careful of your settings.
Yeah. Don't crank it up if you don't have a very good GPU.
Yeah. The one thing I also say that I didn't like about this... the last game was all about her dealing with her husband's death and grief, and also dealing with the trauma of her father and her mother's death, especially the father sacrificing his wife right in front of her by witch burning. The sequel is about her journey dealing with grief, rage, and fear, and also dealing with the drama left by her parents again. And so I was like, why are it to me? And I kind of made this reference when I was talking about this with Jen and my brothers and stuff. It's kind of like Thor Ragnarok into Thor Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
Like, you have Thor go through this arc of three movies, and he's dealing with all these things, and he's totally changed his character, and it's amazing. And then Thor Love and Thunder happens, and he just says, fuck everything I learned.
Yeah.
And it felt like that a little bit in this one, because I'm like, why are we still dealing with her father? Are you serious? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, I'm in agreement, but at the same time, you know, those issues don't just go away. So I get what they are doing.
Know.
At the same time, it would have been nice to have, like, a new voice in there trying to...
Yeah.
Trying to get you to do things that you don't want to do. Like, I don't know. Like, having, like, a different perspective. Maybe this time... Maybe it's like that fucking dumb emotion movie. Instead of her dealing with anger, maybe she deals with, like, anxiety or something. You know, it would be...
You're talking about Inside Out.
Yeah, that one. Like, maybe instead of dealing with this, she deals with that. Like, maybe her emotions evolved... Which...
I did see that after you beat the game, you can play the game or different chapters with different narrators, and it changes his perspective. And I heard that's a really cool aspect of it.
Yeah.
And actually, it can change things a little bit, which is fun. But I wish that was almost, like, more the way they did that throughout.
Yeah.
I also gotta say that the Giants are really cool, but they're just... Yeah, they're just not good replacements for the bosses.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to the Giants, it's boom, 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 done with the game.
Yeah, and it's just dumb because the last Giant, you don't even fucking fight. You fight the guy who epitomizes the last Giant, which I don't quite understand how that defeats the last Giant, but somehow it does.
Because he was making up the Giant. The Giants weren't real.
But they were and they weren't, because everyone says that they saw them. So I'm guessing they were kind of real?
It's one of those things where it's like a lot of those like older tribes and villages and stuff, they full-heartedly believe their leaders. So if the leader says there's a giant and then they convince them, like, oh, that was a giant moving over there, or oh, a giant had killed these people, people will start seeing it themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. It was really strange because there's like clear things in the land that you can see where the giants fucking destroyed the fucking land, and then they're like, but the giants were all made up by this guy, and you're like,
I
fucking fought one. What are we talking about?
That was definitely like such a weird part of the game for sure.
And it didn't feel like giants. They honestly, again, remember we talked about this, we played the first one, and I talked about how there's a moment where you're in this weird river and you're walking through, and it just looks like everything's around you is giant, and they look like fucking titans. And then this one, they did the same fucking thing. They look like Attack on Titan titans.
They kind of do.
They ripped them off for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, defeating all of them were just mainly just puzzles. They weren't even, like, fights. Besides the one you throw a couple of spears at.
Yep. And even that was just so boring.
Yeah, which, I mean, that was, like, the big reveal they showed when
which
they were showcasing
sweet.
The game.
I will say it was sweet and a big reveal, but then it just lacklustered real fast.
Yeah, for sure. That's pretty much... I also have to say I did like the voice acting again. I think it was really good.
Yeah.
I like the voices better in the first one than I do the second one.
Well, it was more limited, right? There were only a few voices in the first one, and they really expanded in the second one.
Well, I feel like they had more voices in the second one sometimes, but I feel like the first one was way more varied in their voices.
Yeah.
So you'd get people that are siding with you and people that are really against you, and then people anywhere in the middle. And this one, I felt like the voices were more unified, which, I mean, kind of does go with her journey of actually, like, learning how to deal with this a little bit more, but I don't know. Yeah, it just felt, like, a little off.
Well, and you could tell, well, I actually liked it because at a certain point they weren't unified, right? The Furies were... Like, when she was under duress or under extreme duress, like, her voices would suddenly spark opposite sides and opposite opinions on things.
Yeah.
So you can tell that the stress was, like, fucking her over pretty hard on the agreement that they all made, basically, to be on the same page.
Yeah.
Which I like. That was a cool little hint in there. One thing that this game really did piss poor, and I think, you know, they should have probably done a little different... The start of this game, you're on, like, a beach, and randomly people you know who are, like, good people will come up and say, help, help, and then they'll just die.
Yeah.
And it's like, it would be so much cooler if you had the option to save them.
Yes.
And
like you, it was like timed events kind of thing where you like, kind of like in Dead Rising where they'd have random survivors that had like, you had to save them within a time limit or they're just dead.
Yeah. Or you had to like run up to the enemy and attack him before he could kill them. Yeah. Like that would have been sweet, but it didn't
happen. And that's what I thought was happening so many of the times, but you couldn't.
Yep. They just died. So I wish they would have changed that too, but you know.
The other thing, and the last thing I have for this, is I really just hated how much walking this was.
Oh,
a lot of people say that this is a walking simulator and a visual showcase, and that is 100% true. You are walking a majority of this game. The thing that I hate about the Final Fantasy remakes is the amount of bloat and the amount of walking in the game.
Yep.
And this game did that for a 6-hour game.
Yep.
When you feel bloated in a 6-hour game, that's a problem.
Yeah, and for this game, too, one thing that was really annoying is when someone's talking, they do have, like, a... Like, while you're trying to explore, they're telling you stories, and you can't go too far from them because then the voice gets lower.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been much better if they had that talking just continuously happen. You could always fucking hear it while you're exploring, because this is a very exploratory game.
Yes.
So...
And then not being by yourself this time, it felt weird while exploring, because you didn't know if, like, the people were going to keep going or not.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know, like, when I was traveling with someone until, like, I finally went on one of the beaten paths, and then I, like, came back, and I saw he was just, like, sitting on a rock waiting for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So well, I don't ever have the guy, to worry about
Thorgester, exploring. When he's in the handcuffs or whatever, and he's just waiting, waiting up there. I'm like, why didn't you run, dude?
Seriously, though.
All right. Well, let's jump into our next little segment here.
Yeah, so the first few hours, or the first couple hours or whatever, I think this game kind of sucks for the first couple hours, honestly. Yeah. It's really slow to start. It's intriguing, it's got a good story, but the combat and puzzles are so simple, so simplified. The first half of the game is literally just, like I said, a visual showcase and walking simulator. So it just, I don't know. I don't think the first couple hours are good at all.
Yeah, and I think if you played this game for 2 hours, you'd probably put it down. So I'm in agreement.
I did. I put this game down like twice. I even texted you at one point, like, I don't know if I'm going to finish this game.
Yeah.
And I was like 3 or 4 hours into it.
Because it is boring, unfortunately, which, you know, the first game wasn't. It was just all exciting, all lots of puzzles. Like,
yeah.
And the puzzles meant something. And like in this one, it was like how in the first one, I did complain that they didn't give you enough of a help index when you're trying to line up the puzzle, because you have to, it's kind of like seeing something, how would you put this, it's like you're creating a picture, like, with objects at different depths in that picture.
It's perception puzzles.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like along this lines of, like, you just have to line up the imagery and everything to perfectly, like, fit together, and once you get that to fit, it fixes in the real world.
Yeah, so with that, in the first game, they gave you no help. And in this game, they gave you way too much fucking help. So maybe somewhere in the middle where you still, like, don't have to perfectly line it up to get it, but you still have to work a little bit.
But, I mean, I didn't mind having to figure it out in the first one either. Like, sometimes it was annoying. There was a couple of them that I was like, it took me way too long to find the answer to. But, like, well, I got through it still.
It wasn't that in the first. Remember, like, I would complain that I would be perfectly lined up, but it still wouldn't be quite right. So I'd have to move like half a step to the left, and then it would be perfect. And I'm like, God damn it, just fucking, it's almost perfect. Just fucking take it. Like, something like that, I'm fine with. But what they did was, like, you could be 2 feet from where you need to be, and it would still fucking line it up. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was way too easy on that.
Yeah, way too helpful.
So yeah, that's the first couple hours of the game. As far as, I guess let's go to the next one.
All right.
Achievements, badges, and trophies.
This game has the lamest fucking achievements of all time. I hate them all.
There are.
I also did them all.
I didn't do two of them, which I'm guessing you can know which ones I didn't finish.
Exploratory ones?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Tales of Midgard, collecting all the lore stinger. The lore stones,
and
then the glimpses of gods,
faces.
Reveal the secret paths that have behind the faces.
Yeah. Get all.
Which that one was interesting, because, like, there was some hidden faces in the first one.
Yeah, but they weren't,
and they
anything
brought that,
like, the
yeah.
I liked actually what they did with the faces in this one. It was kind of cool. Again, it's a perception thing. Once you see the face, it, like, changes the perception, so it creates a path. through the face.
But then there's so many walls that look almost like faces. So yeah. It's like, do I just not have the right angle? Yeah. Why is this not open?
They really didn't balance well how you found, because sometimes you would find like three things within 5 minutes of a level. And then sometimes you'd go a full hour without getting anything, and that's how it was meant to be. You weren't supposed to find anything for a full hour.
Yeah.
So it just made the exploration seem really muddled, and it also made you tired of doing it, because you're like, why am I fucking exploring if I'm not finding anything for a fucking hour?
And then the last achievement in the tyranny, expose the Gotti's lies in the tyranny. Actually, only 16.67% of Xbox players among PC and console have actually finished the game.
Yep, I'm not surprised.
Not either.
Yeah. You know, I got all the achievements. It took the 8 hours or whatever it took me to finish the game. But, like, it's not hard to do it, and you kind of want a little bit of a challenge when you do it. So I would have made it a couple more achievements that are more challenging. You know, they don't have a difficulty rating in this game, which is kind of silly. They really should.
Yeah.
And that might make it more fun, because people tend to like, if they like a game a lot, they want to try it on a harder difficulty.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't know. The make the achievements a little bit more land grab. Like, I think the normal thing is like 45% of the achievements are done through story, and the rest are extra things you have to try for.
Yeah, all of them are story achievements except for the exploratory two that Wei said, and then the only other one that's not story based is launching any chapter with an alternate narrator after you've completed the game.
Yeah.
And you can only do that after you completed the game, so you do have to, you can get all the achievements in one play through the game and then one chapter
play. So then like 8% did that, because after they beat the game, they probably never touched again.
Only 5.81%.
Ah, I was so close. So out of the 16% that did complete it, only 5% kept going.
Yep. Which is, that's not great stats for that.
Yeah, but that's okay. They're easy achievements. It's easy 1,000 if you wanted to buff your score,
If you're looking to bump your gamer score, you can get all the achievements in this game in 9 hours.
Yep.
8 hours if you're really pushing it. You can complete the game in five and a half hours, though, if you're just rushing through it.
All right. Well, the achievements in this, nothing great. So I'm just going to say that right off the bat. Nothing great.
For sure. I didn't have anything in the Easter eggs at all.
Yeah, I didn't really
mainly
find any from previous games. It would have been cool if you saw like a picture of the guy from Odyssey to the West.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been really cool, or something like that.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Andy Serkis.
Or if you you found like Monkey and
what was her name? Her girlfriend.
Not Annie.
Started with a T.
Was it T? I don't remember. Whatever it was. Or if you found like a cool drawing of his motorcycle or something, like that would have been pretty fucking cool.
Just anything, yeah. But I know they're trying to keep it as like realistic as possible, so this isn't a game that's going to have like hidden secrets. And the secrets in this game are just the exploratory things, so there's not even any secrets in this game, so this game literally doesn't have anything for those.
I will say about the exploratory stuff, they do give you a little bit of story, but they're not nearly as interesting as the first game's stories.
No, they aren't.
They were so boring.
Yeah, and the only thing that people have said is that like different characters are supposed to represent different parts of like a family.
Yeah.
Because this is all based on the sins of our fathers. And so like Farum was the parent. Astrider was the self, the person, and then Thorgester was the child.
Yeah.
And then all the monsters are made in our own images, and they're from the sins of our fathers.
Interesting.
And we have to overcome the sins of our fathers. What's our next shit? It is Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Oh, sorry. Is that the end? I meant next shit as in, like, is there anything else we're talking about?
We got to give it our, so what's it worth?
Yes.
How many souls are you giving this one?
Guys, I hate to give it one, because it's really not that bad, but one is probably the right number.
I was debating saying two, just because of how amazing the visuals are. And I do love the sound design, the music, everything. As just a visual showcase walking simulator, It deserves at least a 2 as a full-fledged video game. I agree with Scott. It would be a 1.
Yeah.
I would say only if you really enjoyed the first game would I even slightly recommend this game.
Yeah. It just made it hard. They did not make a very good showcase for a fun, I don't know, like a fun follow-up to such a great game.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that is kind of disappointing, especially because the first game was like 10 to 12 hours and had so much going on with it. And it's a game I've played, I think, 4 times all the way through. Like, I love the first one. So this is hard for me to give it such a bad rating, but I have to.
All right. Well, we gave it a bad rating. So now let's what did we say our next game was?
That is Sam and Max Hit the Road. This is a LucasArts game.
Yep.
It's a point and click adventure.
Yep.
I've never played a point-and-click adventure game in my entire life.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think it's really old, too, right? It's from, like, either early 2000s or late 90s, I think. No, it might be mid-90s.
I can't remember.
We'll talk about it next time.
That's fair.
All right, guys. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you.
We'll catch you on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you.
No.